This is Radia Files, a showcase and analysis of productions from the international radio art network, Radia. Today we visit Wave Farm WGXC in Accra in the USA. Tom Rowe and Galen Joseph Hunter take us on a trip through their history, starting with pirate radio in Florida and ending up farming waves in upstate New York.
We had a micro radio station called 87X in Tampa, Florida that started in 1994 and was in the record store that I had in Tampa for a time in 1995. But then I moved to New York and we started Free 103.9 in 1997. It was myself, free jazz drummer named Greg Anderson, and a visual artist named Violet Hopkins started it. And it was mostly out of their apartment initially, and then it became more mobile. We moved it to different locations. And then I got this other space right next to the Williamsburg Bridge and a few months later, and that sort of became the home, but we kept moving it. After a year or two, we got a second and third transmitter, and we would often lend them out, like for the weekend, basically. If somebody was having an event at their loft or a community meeting or something, it would go for the weekend, and we would just put flyers on the telephone poles where we thought the FM signal would reach. You know, and that was guesswork, but depended. If you were on a three-story building and all the other buildings were three stories, you knew you could get 10 or 15 blocks. There was a lot of civil disobedience on the airwaves in the mid-90s, at least 2,000, probably 4,000 or 5,000 stations across the country. And at one point, there was a federal judge let a pirate station on the air legally for 18 months. So lots more were emboldened during that time in around 96, 97. And each station kind of took a different tact. We sort of saw that there was a lack of a difference in content on American radio. It was all virtually the same. We wanted different voices so that there would be different sounds and different ways of doing radio was our point of view. So we became sort of the station that was focused on radio art. We were in Brooklyn at the time, so there were many artists that were moving there and interested in sound and sound art.
What was happening is there was a building, first Tom's apartment on South 6th Street in Williamsburg, and then ultimately the second floor of that building became a dedicated performance and event space. And it was a very vibrant time for artists in New York City, in Brooklyn specifically. So they'd come and they'd do a show at this kind of underground venue, but it was special because this was also a micro radio station. And so they knew that radio boombox in the hallway was going to be broadcasting them or microcasting them, and so was the one in the bathroom, and maybe a couple of blocks around people were going to be able to hear. And the notable thing that was happening is that the artists started to really engage with that idea conceptually. So I feel like it wasn't just like, I'm going to go play this show and it also happens to be on this pirate radio station, but hey, wait a minute, the radio is a piece of this. And that, for me, became very exciting because I was coming from this nonprofit arts background, and it seemed like, well, there's something happening here. There's something bubbling. There's something emerging, which is ultimately, I think, what encouraged us to formalize as a nonprofit and try to really foster these ideas and these sorts of practices. What changed? Well, I think that we were able to start getting a little bit of grant money, a little bit, but that was very helpful.
Well, it was a slow transition, too. Yeah. It's not like one day we stopped and doing this and started doing this. We were doing one thing, and then we started to get invitations to do things in galleries and performance art spaces and such. The other thing that happened at this time that we haven't really linked in this history, Galen, is that we moved kind of from thinking about things in terms of radio art to thinking about things in terms of transmission art. And that was probably to some extent due to your involvement and bring more talk about video projects that used radio waves and light projects that used radio waves. And so we began thinking of how all these other kinds of forms of art use different radio waves. And that's, I think, how we became talking about transmission art rather than radio art.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were probably lucky or smart enough in that moment to not want to limit ourselves. And I think we knew that we wanted to engage with kind of a multidisciplinary practice with the airwaves. And if we were going to become an arts organization, we wanted to be open enough to work with a lot of different types of artists. And it was with a very important early collaborator, Matt Mikus, who was kind of the third member that was very present during our transition to organization from collective, that we had this conversation about, like, well, what are we going to call it? Is it radio art? No. Well, people think of the term radio, they immediately think of FM and AM. We want to actually use the real definition of radio and the radio spectrum, but we need to think of some other term to make people know that we're not just talking about conventional radio broadcast. There are a lot of people that have contributed in massive ways to allow for Wavefarm to exist today. As we became an organization, we kept a roster of artists like the way the gallery does. So we'd get these invitations to European festivals, and we'd produce one of our transmission events that always had a rotating cast of artists, and we'd look to our roster of 21 very frequent collaborators and figure out who was the best for that certain situation.
We're kind of bringing the concept of radio art to artists that didn't necessarily think about it, or they were doing sounds in some way but not thinking about radio. And then a lot of times we would get somebody to apply and have to spend all this time thinking about how they would use radio in their work and how radio waves applied to their sort of ongoing projects.
We still work really frequently with a lot of the 21 Freeway 3.9 transmission artists, which is great. I mean, it's been a long time since 1997. Wave Farm is the name we gave to the property we're currently sitting on, which is 29 acres in Greene County. And in fall 2004, we expanded activities up here. We kept things happening in Brooklyn.
We had a presence. We continued to have a presence in the city for
many years. Yeah. But I think the kind of the origins of the upstate Wave Farm thing is that. Our ideas, Tom and I separately, even before we knew each other, I think had both had this fantasy, I think is the real description of some kind of upstate artist retreat. We started looking upstate and we used a weekend nearby here, and we happened to find this property that was for sale by this older couple, and it was just perfect.
It's kind of an empty slate that we could see things working here.
Yeah. We knew we wanted at least, we thought we needed at least 20 acres. We thought we needed, we were looking for a house for us to live in, but also an outbuilding or a series of outbuildings that we could convert for use for the organization. I think the idea of creating a rural residency environment where artists could have space in two different ways, physical space and then also space on the transmission spectrum that you can't have in an urban environment.
We found immediately that using the airwaves in New York City and using the airwaves in Acre, New York were two very different things, and the airwaves sound very different. Where in New York City, there's not a space where there's not either a legal station, a pirate station, or some other sort of static or activity. There are empty spaces here and more. And the static sounds different between stations, and just it's a different kind of palette.
Did you always intend to set up a community radio station as part of the project?
No, it was the first time in 20 years that the federal government had made, they did an inventory of frequencies and found that there was these excess frequencies that could be used, and that they made it legal to apply for an FM station. It didn't cost anything, but it just happened with the timing that we moved up here a couple years before this happened.
At the time, I thought I knew what it would mean to embark on this FM full power radio station, which is a laughable thing in retrospect because I had no idea. But at least I knew it was major and going to be challenging, and I was reluctant, but Tom, in our dynamic...
Well, to have a radio art residency program that incorporates an FM radio station is unique in the world.
Exactly. And Tom, we have this, you know, as every working team has, this kind of dynamic where Tom is the risk taker and visionary, and I'm the conservative one that has the administrative backbone. And then somehow on occasion we change places, but it all works out. It was a crazy, crazy thing to try to achieve. And it took a lot of help from a lot of people. And we should just to fully articulate the idea for the station. You mentioned to have a radio art residency that had an FM station would be so unique. But we also felt like not in a million years would we intend to, or would we just want to create a radio art station, because back to our roots about like access and people's own voices being on the air.
We've been doing workshops for years about how the airways are basically parkland and there should be access to them, and how that they're kind of roped off, and how this low power FM bill was important because of all these reasons. So it seemed almost hypocritical if we did not have the community also be involved in the station, have access to the airwaves, because it's the only one in the area that, the only sliver of the dial that the community can walk in and do a show, or walk in and say something during most shows, or call in and talk, or find live human beings.
Radio is such a wasteland in the States. The fact that the general public can literally walk in and get on the air very easily, and the fact that we have 60 hours a week of experimental sound and transmission art, it makes WGXC like no other station in the country. And I think that's actually, I mean, it's great to be unique, but it's a really sad thing that it's such a rarity.
What does WGXC stand for? We're so confused with the names of radio stations.
It doesn't stand for too much of anything, except in the States, it has to be four letters, and it has to start with a W east of the Mississippi and a K west of the Mississippi. And anything that you would think of that you would think is a good idea has already been taken.
So GXC stands for the two counties that the station primarily covers, G being green, X standing for and C for Columbia. So it's Green and Columbia counties.
It just made more sense to call everything Wave Farm, which we think ends up being very simple, but also works on several different levels too, if you think about it in different ways. The word broadcasting linguistically comes from throwing seeds, so farming has a role in the word history.
Apart from the Wave Farm, there are several other of their radio studios dotted around the area.
We're insane. We thought, no, it's not difficult enough to have one studio. Let's see how many we can have. But, I mean, this is a very, it's the area here is, the population's not huge that we cover. We reached a potential 80,000 listeners with the radio station, but it's a lot of mileage. And so we really wanted, the idea was that we wanted people to be able to access a studio and do a show if they wanted to, and not have a hardship of having to drive 45 minutes to get to a studio. So that's sort of what drove the multi-studio idea.
Okay, let's recap all their radio-related activities.
The radio station is one of our main activities. The other one we refer to as being our transmission arts programs, and that includes the artist residency program, the online and physical transmission art archive, Wave Farm Radio, which is a 24/7 online radio station that's always transmission art and experimental sound, as well as a very site-specific AM radio station on 1620 and just covers the physical property.
But they forgot the pond. That's why we will now hear Radio Show number 601, Dive, by Tom Rowe for Wave Farm WGXC.
Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week, we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?
Hello, away, I saw three men in outer space costumes come out of the radio. They climbed out of their frequency and into my head. They told me who I was. They were three small men. They were three small men.
In his inaugural address at the second meeting of the Italian Society for the Advancement of Science on September 11, 1930, Mark Twain expressed his belief that radio waves may travel long distances, even millions of miles beyond the Earth's atmospheric layer. According to Marconi, radio waves go to outer space.
They rode an invisible wave, but they weren't nothing like a rolling ball. They just kept walking until they found their way home. They were chewing on carbon, they were built to the core. That radio was fine, but that radio sore.
A stone thrown into a pond causes ripples or waves on the surface of the water, which move away from the point of disturbance in concentric circles of ever-increasing diameters until they reach the shore.
And what happened to the three small men? Well, I've got one right here, and another one right here. They're right where I left them, right where they're found. Because we're all trapped into concealment. And we're all trapped by a bit of sound. A bit of sound crawling into me. A bit of sound crawling into me. A bit of sound.
That was Neptune with Marconi's belief to start off our journey to inner sound, to Zach Poff's Pond Station. I'm Tom Rowe from Wavefarm Radio and WGXC.
You're listening to the waves from Wavefarm through the pond at Wavefarm, Zach Poff's Pond Station. Has hydrophones at the bottom of the pond. Waves from the water in the pond
reach your ears through radio waves. You can listen anytime online at wavefarm.org, Zach Poff's Pond Station. From sunrise to sunset, it's solar-powered radio from the bottom of the Wave Farm pond. Today on radio, we're going to tune in the waves from the pond. First, let's throw this large rock in and listen to the waves. That was a loud rainstorm. Several artists have performed with the Wavefarm Pond Station. Here's flautist Jeffrey Leppendorf performing with Zach Poff's Pond Station.
You're tuned into Wavefarm Radio, and now you're tuned in just in time for a special broadcast from the Wavefarm, where Art O'Mai music director Jeffrey Leppendorf is about to perform a duet with the pond, with Zach Poff's Pond Station, transmissions from inside a Wave Farm pond, available every day from dawn until sundown, and Jeffrey Leppendorf performing with it.
Thank you.
Baton Station is a platform for translating some of the phenomenon from a pond that we usually can't hear with our ears, and to make that something that we can experience without having to be under the water. So it's a physically, it's a sculpture that's floating on top of the pond right now, out the window, and it has hydrophones that dip down.
If you're listening, it's to your left.
And the hydrophones dip down and into the water, and what we're hearing is a lot of the respiration of plants. We're hearing some bugs and I don't know what other stuff is down there, but now that I have...
What's that noise?
That little rhythmic sound? I don't really know. But now I hear it pretty often in the last couple of weeks, so now I can take this to some, you know, people who actually know these things and ask them.
It could be a particular kind of fish or a frog or...
Maybe. I mean, I think most fish communicate more in ultrasonic range.
More telepathy?
Definitely. it could be frogs. It could be... I have a hunch a lot of it is insects. Insects that are, you know, what is that called? Stridulation, where they rub their legs together and these little thorny parts of their legs make these crackling noises, like crickets. You can also hear traffic going by.
Yeah, how much of the sound is, you think, is from above the... explain what microphones or hydrophones or what is picking up the sound first?
Sure. So a hydrophone is an underwater mic. It's in this case it's a piezoelectric transducer, which is the same kind of thing you put on an acoustic guitar. Like a contact mic is another name for it. And so that translates the vibration of objects into sound that you can hear. And in this case, it's got a little air gap inside of it, kind of like a bubble. And then there are these transducers on either side. And as the vibrations in the water are squishing and contracting...
The air inside?
Yeah, basically. It's pushing against the pillow of air, and that provides this sort of spring that gives you the relief that you need to get sound to come out. So essentially, it's only responding to sound under the water, but a lot of the sound from the air vibrates the water also. And we're pretty shallow. It's only maybe 3 feet into the water. A lot of times the most interesting sounds I found are in these habitats that are in between two other kinds of areas. You know, so as you have these like grasses and reeds and stuff that grow up to the edge of the pond, then when you go down in the first couple feet of water, you get a lot of sunlight. So you get all these, like, you know, algae and things are growing in there. And there's a lot of food there. So there's all kinds of activity there. Whereas if you go a little deeper, you get a different kind of activity. And in this case, not as much. There's a lot going on.
He was
right
playing
now.
A song or something there.
Yeah, it's polyrhythms.
Right now he's a little bashful.
He knows we're listening.
Yeah, that there's a sound recordist, composer, acoustic ecology angle to this, in the sense that these things are available now at the studio here, as well as online, and you can kind of mine these things and use them as triggers to do other things with. I can imagine an installation of some kind where every time one of these loud events happens, it's triggering some physical thing to happen in space.
You're trying to make slaves out of the animals in the pond.
Make them
sound slaves.
They could be our muse. That's how I like to look at it.
Orchestra.
Yeah, or we could be the orchestra and they could be the conductor. That's one way to think of it.
Explain a little how well or not well water, how sound waves move through water.
Yeah, sound moves faster in water and to some extent more efficiently. We wouldn't know that because our ears are so tuned to work in air that the stiffness and the incompressibility of water is a real challenge for our ears. So when we stick our heads under the water, we don't hear what we're hearing now through this feed. But what the hydrophones are able to do is more closely match what we call the impedance, or the sort of natural springiness of the water. They're basically harder than our eardrums. That was a big truck going by. It's interesting, because here in the studio, we got the windows open, and I can hear in real time when a truck goes by.
The truck went by, and then we heard a second later the truck passed. Yeah, the pond is a little further down the road. And
well, are we listening to the web stream?
Yeah, so it's also
so
a little
it's
later.
Delayed. Yeah. Yeah. So we hear it through our mics and through our ears right here live in the studio, and then we also hear a kind of transformed version of it 30 seconds later.
Where's the server? The pond sound is coming from the hydrophone in the pond to... From a transmitter up just on the top of the pond that's sending it back here to the study center, and then it goes to a server. Where is the server?
Right. Well, right now it's using Locus Sonus, which is a user-generated sound map of live mics all over the world. So this particular infrastructure that I've set up here, part of it was to be part of Reveille, which just happened a few days ago. And Reveille was this yearly event that'll hopefully happen again next year, where they track the sounds of the dawn, you know, the dawn chorus from different points on the Earth throughout a whole 24-hour cycle.
Station by Zach Pop in collaboration with Wavefarm and our partner in SoundCompare.
Artist Ralph Lewis searched for the Loch Ness Monster at the bottom of the Wavefarm pond.
There, Nessie. But it took a lot to come here. I can make it up to you. It's important that we stop. It's been a while, I know. But if we could just start a dialogue, if we could just meet here at the pond's edge and talk. Person to person. You know I can't swim. So I can't move well. I'm sorry. Do I need to tell the whole story? I'm so sorry.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm. Over and out.
One of the things I love about WGXC the most, but also one of the things that makes it in some ways difficult to fundraise from a pledge drive point of view, is the multiplicity of sounds and diversity of what you hear on the station. So I feel like we're succeeding in terms of our vision when you definitely dislike something you hear on WGXE and then you really like something that you hear not so far after.
in 1971, perhaps the first pirate television station in the world started in Lanesville in Greene County. In this county, about 20 miles away in the mountains, this group called Video Freaks. So basically the blueprint for what we do now was kind of done here in this exact place on television 30 years before, or 45 years before us. I think it's the United States in general just has an undeveloped history of radio art. I mean, people think here that Canada has more radio artists. And so we don't, oftentimes the discussion doesn't even get to Europe because there's like, well, why isn't there more radio art in the United States? I guess Wart was available. W-A-R-T? No, it was. Nobody wanted it.
Oh.
Wart.
Yes.
It was one thing we considered, but nobody wanted it to be called Wart. Of course, there are waveforms at the ocean that have nothing to do with...
That is true. That actually, I think
very
we were
little
first.
Do with radio transmission.
We started, I think that those started...
I'm not
the
sure
original waveform.
Yes, I know.
Radiophiles is a mobile radio production for Documenta 14. For more information, visit mobile-radio.net.